We are at the joint symposium with Agronomic Solutions for Smallholders and Africa. I'm sorry, I don't know those. I am brand new to this, so welcome everyone. My name is Tamara Benjamin. I'm from Purdue University, but I come to Purdue University from a variety of ways. I'm actually from northern Minnesota, incredibly small town up in northern Minnesota where the Mississippi River starts, and ended up in the Peace Corps in Costa Rica back in 1991. So went from having blizzards and walking to school in 70 below wind chill weather to 90% humidity and 90 degree weather in northern Costa Rica, right on the border with Nicaragua. And it was there that I heard about agroforestry and ended up getting my PhD and master's back in Purdue within agroforestry systems. I studied what we would call alley cropping in the United States, of planting walnuts with corn. And then my PhD I got working with the Mayan Indians in the Yucatan Peninsula, looking at their home gardens. So I have a lot of experience with trees and with plants, but interestingly enough, if you go to Purdue University, you can't get away from soil. So I have a lot of experience with soil classes and looking at soils in different systems. From there, I ended up getting a really cushy job going back to Costa Rica, and I worked at the institute called CATIE. It's a research institute in Costa Rica. It's kind of like the CGIAR system for that area. And it's a very interesting university. It has an agroforestry program, actually. And so I got very involved in looking at farm planning within agroforestry systems. And from there, I decided my kids were getting older. I wanted to go back to the States. And Purdue said, well, if you want to come back, that would be great. And at the time, it was really interesting to understand why. In Indiana, can you imagine that there are over 75% of farmers that have less than 200 acres? No one would believe that unless they actually looked at the statistics, because most people would say, no, it's a lot of large-scale corn and bean operations that are there. And there are those, but the majority of people farming, actual farming, and with an intention to farm, they might have off-farm jobs. 75% of them have less than 200 acres, which is considered, in many, many people's eyes, a small farm. So it was really interesting to take what I had learned from Latin America. I worked all over Latin America, and bring it back to the States. That rarely happens. It's usually north to south transfer of technology. But taking what we learned of working with smallholders and bringing it back to Indiana has been a really interesting concept. And for the last year and a half, I started a program called Diversified Farming and Food Systems, which brings together urban agriculture, beginning farmers, local food, small farms. We had a really vibrant small farms team that has a small farms conference that has been growing each year. We actually brought the model of that farm to four different countries in Africa, to Kenya, Ethiopia, Uganda, and Tanzania, where we worked with Catholic Relief Services to set up small farm conferences there. I would highly recommend anyone that hasn't been to a small farm conference and that is involved with smallholders should go to one to understand the differences of what they actually, their needs are, and how they learn. And so from there, I actually was, Elizabeth reached out to me last year, or this year actually, about middle of this year, and said, we need another community leader for 2018. I said, I'm not sure I'm the right person because I don't work in Africa right now. But she said, well, you have a lot of other experience. So I'm really proud because I got the black little thing today. I'm now the community leader for Agronomic Solutions for Smallholder Farmers for 2018. We'll talk a little bit at the end about how we need to get this community together and find another leader, a vice leader for next year, and then that would become the community leader for 2019. So that's just a little bit of background on me. I'm sticking around for the day, so I'd love to have any other conversations with people if you'd like to know more about me. But really, we're here for these wonderful people that decided to sign up for this symposium. We've got amazing talks set for you. Unfortunately, the first speaker, Charles Comey, wasn't able to make it, but his boss, was able to come. So that's pretty cool. I wish I could have sent my boss. I'm not sure he would have showed up. But we have Michael Robotham, who's the acting national leader for World Soil Resources at NRCS in Washington, D.C. It's a branch of the Soil Science Division and working with the International Program Division. He's going to talk about some of their highlights that they had with a project they were working on in Haiti. So thank you, Michael.
Thanks, and welcome, everyone. Glad to see that some folks are here. Whenever you give a talk on the last day, you're always wondering if anybody's going to show up. First and foremost, as was mentioned, I'm the fill-in. For those of you, if anybody knows Charles, I mean, I'm obviously not Charles. And if you see my name on that author list, you see that I'm about 17th down there. That's because I was involved in the project because they were nice enough to put the boss on the list, not because I actually was the person doing the field work. It's actually interesting being in this meeting because this is a bit of back to the future for me. I started out in this business, mostly in Southeast Asia. Actually, bachelor's work in the Dominican Republic and then a lot of work in Southeast Asia. Moved over into the domestic side, and so it's nice to get involved and talk about some international stuff, as that's not really not something I'm directly involved in at the moment, although, as was mentioned, I did pick up this title of acting national leader for World Soil Resources about 6 months ago because somebody retired and they looked around and said, yeah, you've worked internationally, why don't you do it? So anyway, enough of the history. What I'm going to talk about today is some work that we did in Haiti, and in particular, one particular piece of a project that NRCS was involved in Haiti with USAID and with the Haitian Ministry of Agriculture, looking at soil survey work within this area that we call the Cul-de-Sac Plain, which is just to the east of Port-au-Prince. I'll whip through this. We'll talk about a bit about the context, a little bit of the overview of the project, but then the main focus of this talk is on some results. This symposium is focused on organic matter measurement and organic matter management, and so I want to focus on that part, and then we'll talk a little bit about what we think that might mean. The larger context of this, as you're all aware, there was a huge earthquake in Haiti in 2010. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but it is 7 years ago now, that caused tremendous amounts of damage, loss of life, damage to property. It was followed close behind by a major hurricane for the effective double whammy. But what that led to was a significant U.S. government investment. At President Obama's direction, and all agencies, including USDA, were asked to identify things that we could do as agencies to help out. And so NRCS, in particular the World Soils Program, which I'm now in charge of, proposed the Haiti Soil Survey and Natural Resources Initiative. And the main focus of this was to build the capacity within the Ministry of Agriculture, the idea that soils information, whether that's traditional soil survey that we like to think of in the United States or a much more broadly defined concept of soils information, but the better soils information is really a prerequisite and one of those underlying things that places need if we're looking at long-term planning. We're looking at whether that's agricultural planning, whether that's infrastructure planning, wherever that is. And that the only way that this is going to be sustainable is if we as the U.S. can help build that capacity within Haiti, because we can't keep sending people down. You can't keep doing specific projects. We need to build that local capacity so that folks can do it themselves. So this specific project was a collaboratively conducted detailed pilot soil survey project. It was in the Plaine de Cul-de-Sac, and we'll talk a little bit about where that is. It was a small area, only 3,000 hectares, and the idea was twofold. It was to train and build this local capacity, and also to provide an example that start to finish of this is something that this is how it would work, this is how it could be done, and here's the skills you need to do it. So this is the project location. It's a bit of a messy slide. I understand that. Port-au-Prince is in the Big Bay, the jaw of the pinchers of Haiti. This area is a little bit to the east. You can see in the upper right-hand corner a very typical, most everyone in this room has worked in various countries of the tropics, in that landscape of small farms, of small communities, myriad of land uses. Probably looks familiar to pretty much everyone in this room. So what did we do? We worked with the Haitians to identify what they were looking for, and we came up with a combination of things. We used a combination of digital and traditional soil survey methods. What we ended up with were, in this pilot survey area, were 11 soil types and map units. We sampled representative soil patterns, described them to NRCS standards, and then conducted a standard suite of laboratory analyses on those. So this is a map of the soil map units in the project. As is typical with soil mapping, these follow landforms pretty tightly. You'll see the area to the south, and I don't think we have a pointer. Maybe I can get it to work here. There it goes. This area down here to the south, you're in a river valley here, and so these are uplands, heavily eroded limestone bedrock. You go down into, there's a little ridge here you can see in this purple, and then these are alluvial, combination of alluvial fans and floodplain areas, so flatter terrain. Silt loam, silty clay, silt loam kind of soils, very typical of an alluvial landscape. This is a very arid area, so again, nothing that you wouldn't expect to see in a similar area. But what I want to focus on today in particular is soil organic carbon. And what did we find with soil organic carbon, and how does that potentially inform things moving forward on a number of levels? Well, the modal surface soil organic carbon is 2%. Okay, well, that's about kind of what you expect in a lot of places. I mean, it's a little higher than I would have personally expected. I'd kind of expect it to be a bit worse. But the big take-home message from this slide is that there is a huge range. That these upland areas, again, that are lightly managed, pretty well vegetated, have pretty high organic carbon, 7 to 8% in the surface horizon, surface 0 to 15 centimeters. Whereas these areas down the slope, being extensively farmed, conventionally tilled, have relatively low levels of organic carbon. Again, this is a fairly dry area. We aren't having the huge amounts of weathering that you might see in a wetter part of the country. The other thing that I want to point out is that the subsurface distribution of this carbon varies widely. So these are the surface values that I'm showing here. Subsurface distributions vary across the board. I'm just going to jump through a few of these subsurface examples. You have to give somebody else's talk, right? So they give me a 10-minute slot, and they give me 22 slides. So I'm trying to jump through things a little quick here, so if I'm rushed, that's why. Here are just some examples of some typical landscapes on the right. What you'll see on all these slides is you'll see a soil profile on the left, you'll see a landscape shot in the center, and you'll see the organic carbon distribution with depth on the right. And pretty much all these organic carbon distributions, what you'll see is you'll see a bulge in the surface layer. That's, root biomass from cropping. They do apply a fair bit of fertilizer. They do apply fertilizer when they can get it. And then you'll see a typical, again, decrease of organic matter as you go down. Again, most of the agricultural soils, you're seeing this 1 to 2% that drops as you go into the subsoils. This is one of these, the soil in this particular spot had a relatively higher soil organic carbon. So again, just a wide range. I don't want to dwell on those numbers, but just this range. And this is 3,000 hectares. So this is not a big area. And that's really the take-home point of all this, that when we're looking, what this showed, and numerous other studies have shown, we're not showing things that aren't, that we don't know, but we're showing things that we often don't think about when we're designing programs, when we're developing interventions, when we're looking at regional plans, is that even within this 3,000 hectare area, we have major differences. We have surface organic carbon that goes from less than 1 to 7. Management recommendations, fertilizer recommendations, are very different if you're talking about organic matter that's 1 versus organic matter that's 7. And so this variability is influenced by both environmental and management factors. And again, in many cases, many places in the developing world, I still hate that term, but I'm going to come up with a better one, we're talking about small farms, we're talking about diverse landscapes. So again, within this 3,000 hectare area, we have this huge amount of diversity. This high spatial variability coupled with small land holdings creates these programmatic challenges. One side does not fit all. And the real bottom line take home is that any plans and programs that, whether they're internally driven, whether they're externally driven, need to consider, you know, both the environmental factors, because that's going to limit what you can do, that's going to limit potentials, and the management factors, particularly when we're talking about something that is highly dependent on both of those, like soil organic carbon. I'd like to thank the folks who paid for it, and that's American tax dollars through USAID. Also like to thank our colleagues at the Ministry of Agriculture in Haiti, and I'd certainly like to thank, as I say, I'm the spokesperson here. You saw that long list at the beginning. None of this would have happened without those great people who I have the pleasure to call my colleagues. So that's my position. I do unfortunately have to run off to another talk, so I'm not able to stay, but I will be around the rest of the day. So if you do see me, please pull me aside, and I'd be happy to chat about this or anything else we're doing with NRCS. So thank you very much.